Let's look at the Gospel of John again, our key text. As we look at praise and worship, today is the second message on praise and worship. And we are doing a series on praise and worship. Jesus, in speaking to the woman at the well, made a statement about praise and worship that we want to take note of in verse 22 to 24. It says, "You worship what you do not know. We know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews, but the hour is coming, and now is, when the true worshippers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for the Father is seeking such to worship Him." And last week we saw what it means by the Father seeking such to worship Him, how God calls us to praise and worship, how God longs and yearns to hear our worship. Verse 24, "God is spirit, and those who worship Him must worship in spirit and truth." Now let's cross-reference to the book of Ephesians. Ephesians has 6 chapters. And the most interesting thing about the first 3 chapters is its focus on the goal or destiny of the church to be filled with the presence of God, the praise and the worship of God. At the end of every chapter, of the first 3 chapters, there's a statement that is made about what God longs for His church today to be like. If I could make one statement and summarize all the hundreds of verses that refer to the destiny of the church, and sum it all in one statement, it would be that the church, the bride of Jesus Christ, be filled with the fullness of the presence and the worship of God. That is our destiny. At the end of chapter 1, notice he says in verse 22-23, Ephesians, He put all things under His feet, and gave Him to be head over all things to the church, which is His body, the fullness of Him who fills all in all. Notice, we, His church, He referred to as His body, and He tells us that He fills us to be His fullness. That is His destiny, that He wants to fill us with the fullness of His presence. At the end of chapter 2, it says there in verse 21 and 22, "In whom the whole building, that is the church, being fitted together, grows into a holy temple in the Lord, in whom you also are being built together." Now that is still in the process. We are being built together for a dwelling place of God in the Spirit. That's our destiny. The high purpose of the church is that we be a dwelling place of God. That is the number one destiny of the church, to be the dwelling place of God. At the end of chapter 3, it says in verse 19, chapter 3 verse 19, "To know the love of Christ, which passes knowledge, that you may be filled with all the fullness of God." Now, anyone reading these scriptures will never miss the fact. Paul repeats it 3 times. We never miss the fact that God's destiny for the church is that the church be filled with the fullness of God's presence. And if you think about that, that is the essence of Christian life. Think about doing everything that you normally do in Christian life minus the presence of God. It's boring. It's dull. It's hard work. And it's not satisfying. And sometimes that happens. Sometimes when our relationship with God is not as hot, as warm as it should be, because we're negligent and our love for God has grown cold, we get into a rut of doing all the quote-unquote things that we're supposed to do as Christians, but something becomes missing. And you know what that something is? The presence of God. And I would go as far as to say that the presence of God gives meaning to Christian life. You take the presence of God from our life, and Christianity is no different from any other religion. Full of creeds, commandments, requirements, different things. You take the presence of God out, and all we have is an empty shell. So the presence of God is the essence of even our personal life. And it's what makes you want to know God more, what makes you want to love God more. And in fact, it is the strength of God's presence that keeps us from sin. Isn't it true that when the presence of God is strong in your life, you don't feel like sinning? You don't feel like doing the wrong thing? All you feel like is that you want to give your life to God? Now, wouldn't it be wonderful if that presence can be maintained? Out in the world, out where the rubber hits the road, out where the temptations are strong, and if that presence can be there, you would never fall. So the whole key in Christian life is the presence of God. And sad are the times for even Christians or ministers or full-time workers when they become so busy for God and they forgot the presence of God in their life. And what happens? They become dry. And Jesus told the woman at the well, when you drink of this water, you will never thirst again. We know many Christians are dry and thirsty. And you know the key? Get back the presence of God. Get back into that presence of God. Because that presence is something that makes Christianity what it truly is. And as we talk about the presence of God, we want to relate to how to keep that presence going. How to keep it strong. And there is a direct relationship between the presence of God and praise and worship. There is a direct relationship. In fact, it's directly proportional to praise and worship. The more praise and worship is in our life, the greater the presence of God. Now we're going to look at some scriptures in that area. Let's first look at the book of Psalms, chapter 22. Psalms, chapter 22. Verse 3. Psalms, chapter 22, verse 3. It says, "But you are holy, enthroned in the praises of Israel." And the word enthroned in the Old King James, as you can see in the projection, is the word inhabit. It says, thou art holy, thou inhabits the praises of Israel. So when there's praise in worship, God's presence can come. Where there's a lack of praise and worship, it will be hard for God's presence to come. God dwells in the praises of His people. Incidentally, we are called in the Epistle of Peter a kingdom of priests to offer up praises unto God. We are a people of praise. A holy priesthood. So we are called to be worshippers of God. And I will emphasize again, the highest call for any Christian is to be a worshipper of God. The highest call for any full-time minister, apostle, prophet, evangelist, pastor, and teacher is to be a worshipper. And unless we are first worshippers of God, we got nothing to tell people. For unless we know God, and the only way to know God is to worship Him, we have nothing to tell people. So the call to worship is the highest call God has given us. And the only way to get His presence into our life is to praise and worship. And you will immediately notice that in your Christian life, during the times you complain a lot, you grumble a lot, or you just neglect to say thank you or praises to God, that is when the presence of God starts diminishing. And this morning we want to see that relationship. Why? We want to see not only the fact that God inhabits the praises of Israel, but we also want to see why He does that. Why is it that He does that? And the only way that we can understand that is to look at some examples in the Old Testament. And there's a little, you know, the Old Testament are shadows of the things that are true. And so, we're going to take one illustration from the Old Testament that illustrates the presence of God. The praise and worship. Praise and worship is like a canopy. It's like a covering that is required before God's presence can come. So, in the Old Testament, there's a little story that I'd like to look at in the book of Leviticus chapter 12. Leviticus chapter 16. Leviticus 16 is about the Day of Atonement. And if you remember your Bible history, which we're going to teach one of these days anyway, possibly on a Wednesday night, there are the seven feasts of Israel. There's a feast of unleavened bread and feast of Passover. And then you have the feast of weeks. And Feast of Pentecost, and Feast of Trumpets, and all the various feasts, they celebrated seven feasts a year. The seven feasts that they celebrate in Israel. Of all the feasts, the most important is the Day of Atonement. And on that day, it's more a fast than a feast. Because once a year in the Old Testament in Israel, and today they call it Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement was the day that the high priest will enter the most holy place and bring forth a sacrificial blood for and on behalf of all the whole nation. If you remember the Old Testament Tabernacle, there is in three sections. There's one section called the outer court, where all the people can enter. And then there's a veil. And when you enter the veil, it's called the holy place. Only the priest can enter. And so the first two places, there are people there every day. There is one place called the most holy place. Further in, the most holy place, which no one can enter except one person, and once a year. The high priest, who must make sacrifices for himself before he can enter in. And he only does that one day a year. Can you imagine? One day a year. That is why the Day of Atonement, the seventh feast, is the most important and the most sacred and holy day in Israel's entire year. And in that year, according to traditions, if you know the high priest robes, praise the Lord, the high priest robes, the priest, of course, wear long robes and the skirting around his robes. The skirting around at the bottom of his robes have a little designs. And the little designs are pomegranates and a bell, pomegranates and a bell, pomegranates and a bell. And so whenever the high priest is moving, the bells would tinkle. And the bells would make sound, little sound. Ding, 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 ding. So everybody would know the priest is moving. Praise God. Thank God they don't do that to pastors today. And you know where he is. And so, you know, the bells would ring every time the high priest moves. And according to those customs in those days, that that Day of Atonement is so important, if their sacrifice is not accepted by God, the whole year is not blessed. So that was very important. Everyone is fasting on that day. And so, because it's so important and so dangerous work indeed, according to those traditions, they would tie a rope around the priest's leg when he entered the most holy place, so that in case something is wrong in his life, that he didn't cover his blood, or unconfessed sin, or something not proper, and the high priest dies inside the most holy place, no one will be able to take him out until next year. So they tie a rope around his leg in case something happens. That is called insurance. That was the insurance policy, in case something goes wrong. And in case a high priest dies, and how do they know when he dies? Remember the little bells? So from the outside, they hear the bells ringing, ding, 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 ding. So on that day, everyone outside will be listening very carefully. It's total silence, pin drop silence. And all they hear is a beautiful sound of the bells ringing. So whenever they hear the bell, ding, 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 if they say ding, 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 chup, you know something is wrong. And they will have to slowly pull a rope and drag that high priest out. I don't want to be the high priest. It's a dangerous job. Why so dangerous? Why so awesome? Because the presence of God is so powerful that everything that has sinned is destroyed. God doesn't go around killing people. It is just the energy and the force of His presence is so awesome that it will melt our flesh. Even the visions of Jesus or visions of God's presence and glory are all tapered down according to our ability to take it. If God were to release all His presence, I don't think the whole earth can even contain and be one piece. Remember how big God is. Some of us have no idea how big God is. Do you know that they can build the most powerful telescopes? Now, let's take something more easy to relate, alright? Some of you love to see science fiction, Star Trek, right? And do you know that in Star Trek, the most they travel is probably 1,000 light years or so, if you look at their warp speed, so-called. And it's only one of those episodes that they happen to travel, you know, 10,000 light years away or so. And most of them are, you know, within 1,000, 2,000 light or so light years. And do you know the Milky Way from edge to edge, would take 100,000 light years to cover? So my friends, going by science, if what science fiction is saying, all the Klingons, the Cardassians, and all those are still inside the Milky Way. They haven't traveled beyond that, based on what they're saying in terms of light years. We don't realize how big our one galaxy is called the Milky Way. It's so big that it takes 100,000 years to cover from end to end. Of course, there are no such thing as Cardassians, Klingons, and all those things out there. But just to relate to you something that you could picture in your mind. So in your mind, all of Star Trek occur within the Milky Way. So the Alpha Quadrant, Deep Space Nine, and all those are different sections of only the Milky Way. Phew. And can you imagine that if you were to, the telescopes that they have built, the Hubble telescope and every telescope that they built, when they peer through it, they found more galaxies. My friends, even Star Trek hasn't gone beyond the galaxy yet. And when they peer through the telescope, they see more galaxies. Some bigger than the Milky Way. And all those were created by our God. Whew. We have no idea how big and how powerful He is, because no one has seen the age of the universe. And when you imagine all those things, you realize that God's presence must be powerful. Everything that there is written in the Bible is only a drop in the ocean of His presence. God's presence is so powerful, it destroys. Not because it wants to destroy, because of the amount of energy inside. That is why we all need new bodies to go to heaven. This physical body will be burned out. It will be exposed to the fullness of God's presence. God is awesome and powerful. Just like electricity can destroy. Electricity was not created by God to destroy. It's just an energy force that can benefit us. Same with God's presence. It's just energy. And energy can be destructive or constructive. And there's the energy of God's presence that is there. And that is why when the high priest goes in, and the holy place is a measure of God's presence inside. And God's presence is so strong inside that death cannot sustain itself in the sense. Death cannot exist unless the sin and the mortal body gets destroyed and wiped off. Anything of sin and death cannot exist. That is why when they put Moses' rod into the Ark of the Covenant, it budded and bare fruit without even being planted into the ground. That's God's presence. So strong, so powerful. And knowing the intensity of God's presence and how important it is, He gives specific instructions for the high priest to protect himself from God's presence. So you look at Leviticus chapter 16. On the Day of Atonement, this is what He told the high priest to do. Leviticus 16. After taking the scapegoat and all the offering for himself, etc., and the sin offering, in verse 12, Leviticus chapter 16, verse 12, it says, "Then he shall take a censer full of burning coals of fire from the altar before the Lord, with his hands full of sweet incense beaten fine, and bring it inside the veil. And he shall put the incense on the fire before the Lord, that the cloud of incense may cover the mercy seat that is on the testimony, lest he die. He shall take some of the blood of the bull and sprinkle it with his finger on the mercy seat on the east, and before the mercy seat he shall sprinkle some of the blood with his finger 7 times. Verse 16. He shall make atonement for the holy place because of the uncleanness of the children of Israel.